The Property Pod. Welcome to The Property Pod with MoneyWeb. The property sector is an ever-changing sector. And in this podcast series, your host, Suren Naidu, chats to movers and shakers in the property industry.
Hello and welcome to The Property Pod, South Africa's premier property investor podcast, right here on MoneyWeb. My name is Suren Naidu, and on this weekly show, we gain insider insights from leading executives, analysts, developers and entrepreneurs in South Africa's vibrant property industry. This is our final episode for 2024, and I have a super guest. Both of us are working of sorts during the holiday period, and I'm privileged to have the finance ghost on the show, who has built quite a following with his investment insights on his site, but also as a podcaster with MoneyWeb on a podcast called Supernatural Stocks. He's a former investment banker. I don't know if former is former because he's probably still doing his thing in the investment banking space, but on the outside of it, perhaps. He has insider insights on corporates. And since this is the Property Pod, I thought let's get him on the show to share some listed property insights, especially with the sector rebounding strongly this year overall, that is. What's more is that one of his Supernatural Stocks podcasts, which was on the listed property sector and no surprise featured Cape Town, turned out to be the top podcast for 2024 for the Finance Ghost on MoneyWeb. The Finance Ghost, welcome to the Property Pod.
Hi, Suren. Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's quite fun to be interviewed on these things as opposed to being the interviewer. So thanks for letting me go to the other side, I suppose.
You're welcome. Could be ambiguous with your podcast called Supernatural Stocks and the Finance Ghost. But jokes aside, listed property and SA REITs were the top performing asset class for most of 2024. How did the sector end off the year? Granted, there's a day or so to go, but the last few months hasn't been as great as the first three quarters of the year, as it were.
Yeah, so it's quite interesting. I mean, I think you first have to define the sector quite carefully. If you look on the JSE, you'll see there are actually a few property indices. So it's not as easy as just saying, the industrials index. So some of them are based on the free float, for example, so how tradable the index is. Others are based on whether it's a REIT or not. And remember, not every single property fund is a REIT. And this is why if you're going to buy an ETF in this space, and I always like to go to, what is investable, you've got to be quite careful with what you're actually buying. So for example, the Satrix Property ETF tracks the South African Composite Property Capped Index. Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, not least of all at the end of December. But basically what that does is the weightings of each underlying stock are capped at 10% at each rebalancing date. So in other words, you can't have more than 10% of the fund in any individual stock. Now, if you go and have a look at a different ETF, like the OneInvest SA Property ETF, that just looks at the top 20 liquid property companies and it doesn't cap them. So in there, NEPI Rockcastle is a quarter of the fund and Growthpoint is almost 14%. So you actually get very, very different underlying exposure, even though you're still buying a property ETF. And that's why defining the sector, what you're actually looking at, is quite important. However you do it, though, it's been a good year. So the Satrix ETF has returned 23% this year. That's excluding dividends. It's currently on a trailing yield of around 7%. So that gives you some idea of where the dividend yield is. As for the OneInvest ETF, that's returned 19.8%, so being overweight NEPI and Growthpoint was actually not helpful in the past year. And the dividend yield is around 5%. So you can see how the weightings make a difference, but either way, it's been a very strong year in the property sector. Although, as you say, things did calm down quite a lot towards the end, especially since around September. It's been pretty flat. You needed to kind of be in well before that to really get the uptick.
Thanks for that, especially on the ETF side. And generally, our property analysts tend to focus on the SAPI and the LP. So that insight is quite useful because a lot of investors invest from that perspective. But what's behind the poorer performance since September? Because I remember doing a podcast around September or October that talked about how strong this performance from a total return perspective. I think it was over 30%. But obviously, that's purely SA REITs if it's the SAPI.
Yeah, so it's the old story, right, of when something really makes it into the media and everyone is talking about it, the best returns have probably already happened. So I was writing about property coming into this year based on nothing more than just the interest rate cycle, right? And what was really lovely in the markets over the past 4 years, aside from, you know, our lifestyles weren't so great, and we all know how fun that was, COVID. But for those who followed the markets, it was an incredible crash course in how interest rates affect markets. And basically all you had to do was look at what did badly, you know, as interest rates went up really fast, because you can pretty much assume that it will then do well as interest rates start to come down. You know, you almost don't need to know anything else. And so coming into this year, it was fairly clear, I think, that property was going to have a decent time. You know, you didn't even have to really guess too hard about the GNU, etc. But by the time we made it to sort of September, you know, a lot of those expectations of, okay, what might the interest rate cutting cycle look like had already been baked in. A lot of the valuation uplift in these property funds had already happened. And eventually you have to reach a point where things consolidate, because nothing can go up forever. You know, we all wish it could, but that's not how it works. So things can go up sharply, but then they will at some point start to go sideways for a while. And then hopefully there's a catalyst for them to keep moving up, or something goes wrong and then they start to drop, which hopefully won't happen here. I don't necessarily think it will happen here. But we have taken a breather because I think people have realized that interest rates are still going to take longer to come down than we would like. And a drop in interest rates is the main driver of property fund returns at the end of the day, because it means that their debt has become cheaper and property funds use a lot of debt. And it also means that the tenants are in a better space. You know, their own balance sheets are stronger, and that means they can afford to renew their leases. They don't have to negotiate as hard with their landlords. And if they do negotiate too hard, well, you know what? There's another tenant around the corner who's happy to come in and take a new lease with that landlord. So a low interest rate environment is a lovely thing for property funds. It really, really is. And anything that moves us closer to that is going to drive those share prices. Anything that suggests that lower interest rates are further away will lead to those share prices just taking a breather. And that ultimately is what's happened. And of course, in November, we had the US election. Trump has won that. So, you know, a lot of his policies, people are talking about how they may well end up being quite inflationary. You know, that wouldn't really support a faster drop in interest rates. So these are some of the reasons why things have taken a bit of a breather.
I think, you know, people forget about the interest rate sometimes, generally speaking, because everybody was caught also on the GNU hype. But we'll get to GNU in a moment. The sector is still up overall for 2024. Final stats, total returns are still to be released probably in Jan. But which were some of the top performing stocks, and why do you think this was the case?
So it's quite fun to actually dig into some of the different buckets within the sector, because not all of these REITs are comparable. Yes, they may all be REITs, but some are purely focused on offshore, some are only local, some are a mix. So you've got to be quite careful with how you actually define the thing. So if I just look at offshore to start with, you know, Nepi Rockcastle, that's pretty much regarded as the strongest REIT on our market, but that doesn't necessarily mean it will give you the best returns in any given year. It's a risk-reward thing. People don't really see Nepi as a risky play. So a lot of the, you know, the valuation reflects that, and you're unlikely to have a year where you get a 30% return in NEPI. That would mean it was terribly mispriced, and with so many people following it, that's not really likely. So NEPI managed a 10% return year to date at the time of recording. Sirius Real Estate, which everyone used to fight with me about because they all wanted to pay a huge premium to book for that thing, and I kept writing about how that's a very bad idea, that is down 17% this year. So that is huge underperformance versus the rest of the property market. It's not good. Exposure to Germany, maybe not the best thing to have right now. Lots of jitters around Europe. And again, it all comes down to valuation and expectations. Some of that is also Rand strength. So the Rand, I had a look, is up about 4% versus the Euro year to date. How nice to be able to say that. Isn't that great? And obviously, the rest of that move is just a derating, effectively, of the valuation of these things. Schroeder European Real Estate, another example of where offshore didn't work really. Yes, they have some tax question marks at the moment, but it was down 13.5% year to date. Shaftesbury in London, down 10%. Hammerson, down 2%. Primary Health Properties, that was one of the new listings this year, that offshore group, down 26%. The TLDR here for offshore property is that it was not the right place to be in 2024. You know, it has been better than local in other years. So, you know, you've always got to be careful with defining something as just a 12-month period. But that actually shows you how strong NEPI's performance was in that context of how badly most of the offshore property funds did. Special mention also to Lighthouse, up 10, almost 11%. But the best liquid offshore name, Siren, is actually Mass Real Estate, Mass PLC. So, you know, they've been working really hard to fix their balance sheet and win back the trust of investors, because you may recall they cut their dividend. They said, listen, you know, in 2 or 3 years' time, we're going to have a huge debt refinancing issue. We're cutting the dividend now to actually start to prepare for this thing, which, you know, is actually not really what South Africans are used to. We are used to corporates who, you know, if you'll forgive a tongue-in-cheek comment, they like to get to the edge of the cliff and then go, oh my goodness, we need a rights offer. How awful. None of us saw this coming. How can this be? So, you know, Mass was super proactive with this and got punished by the market anyway. But those who actually bought into that proactivity have done very, very well from Mass. So well done to them. 36% return in 2024. And then it pains me to say this, but among the less liquid names, Texton takes the cake among the offshores with a 60% return. Although the liquidity is such that you can look again tomorrow, it could be a very different number.
Your thoughts around ATTAC, because it sold down in Mass, but obviously they did some cool things with the GPF on Waterfall. Not to go into too much detail there, but was it a good decision for them to sell or poor timing?
Yeah, so look, hindsight has told us it was probably the wrong call. But at the end of the day, I also don't really think that these property funds should be running around with stakes in other listed property funds. It's a feature of the industry, and I think it's unhelpful, because I can just as easily go buy shares in Mass myself. Why do I need to own it through ATTAC? And then it's effectively the discount on a discount. I mean, it's those old, like, you know, horrible multi-tiered structures that just don't really work. So look, hindsight certainly tells us they should have hung on, without a doubt, but they panicked because they figured the dividends were not coming, or the dividends haven't been coming. It's been a NAV story. So the Mass Real Estate story has been a valuation and NAV story, and ATTAC needs dividends. Sorry. ATTAC needs dividends to actually come through and, you know, pay dividends to its own shareholders. So among the most liquid names on the JSE, ATTAC's right up there, actually. They returned 48% this year, which was really, really good. So they actually outperformed Mass, hilariously. High prop up 51%. I'm happy to say I got 42% of that, so I'll take it. It's not because I bought high prop at the start of the year. I've owned it a bit longer than that, but it is what it is. That one's worked well. ATTAC I got out of when they actually announced that big transaction directly into Waterfall. They had a big unlock there in the share price, and at that point, I took my profits and went. I got out too early. I should have let it run. Fortress B, another strong one, 46%. That one I only got through ETF exposure, unfortunately. Growthpoint, Class Captain, only up 10.2%. So very much the same as NEPI Rockcastle, actually, with the performance dragged down by some of the more unwanted parts of the portfolio, you know, the big Sanson office side, et cetera, et cetera. That broad portfolio exposure doesn't always work. And so if you look at it, it's a bit of a motley crew in terms of the top performers. They almost each have a reason for it, right? So, you know, one of the things that is fairly consistent across the board is if you have a lot of debt, like a property fund does, and then you have retail exposure, which got the real benefit of the GNU this year, that's where it's kind of happened first, then they did well, you know. Fortress B, that's more a story of the market coming to terms with the new capital structure and seeing that it's actually worked out okay, so that's a good news story there. But I think overall investors took more of a risk-on approach to the REIT sector this year. And that's why some of the more unusual names actually gave the best returns rather than your typical giants. Although again, let's not say that 10% is a bad return, and that's excluding dividends. So almost no matter where you played this year, you know, unless you were very unlucky and you had all your money in Sirius, you've pretty much had an okay year.
As mentioned in my intro, your Supernatural Stocks podcast on MoneyWeb on the 2nd of December was a hit. It zoned in on a property, in particular the Western Cape, and the move by REITs to invest more there. Interestingly enough, I expect the trend, as you suggested in the pod, to continue. I know it's not only about Growthpoint. There are smaller counters also invested in the Western Cape. But we had an exclusive of sorts story. It's been on mentioned for a while, but we got some nice graphics and that sort of thing of what the Grandeur Bay expansion will look like at the V&A, and that's like the trophy property, not just for Growthpoint and the PIC, but for the Western Cape as South Africa's top tourism destination. Can you share further insights on this, that move to the Western Cape, particularly for REITs, because we've heard about semigration quite a bit from a residential side. But you also have this trend where some REITs listed, particularly SA REITs, are still looking for offshore exposure. You look at Vukile with the expansion into Portugal, in addition to Spain. Emira, which is pretty much a medium-sized fund, looking at Poland beyond the US now, in addition to South Africa. And I haven't really covered this, but resilience play into France, which has been quite below the radar.
Yeah, so look, I think a lot of the offshore-focused REITs, you know, 2024 may not have been their year, but they will continue to do what they do because that is what they do, if that makes sense. You know, this was just a 12-month snapshot. That doesn't mean that suddenly an offshore-focused REIT wakes up on 1 January 2025 and goes, you know what, we really missed a trick here. It's time to sell up in Poland and we're going to buy everything in the Western Cape. It's just not how it works. So I would also caution that I think the strong performance in South Africa, maybe we'll talk about this just now, that happened in 2024 will probably not repeat in 2025 because they aren't the same catalyst. So this kind of, you know, local blixaming of offshore, if I can put it like that, that happened in 2024, there's no guarantee it's going to happen again in 2025. So we'll see what happens there. Those offshore funds will continue doing what they do. And they're actually looking for sort of higher growth developed markets. They've learned a lot of lessons. It's part of what I went into, I think, in that podcast that did so well on supernatural stocks. But if we look at the local funds and we talk about this Western Cape trend, you know, the South Africa focused funds need to find opportunities in South Africa. And what I mean by that is that I don't think there's appetite among the investor community for a South African focused fund to suddenly wake up and say, oh, you know, now we're starting to do a deal somewhere in Europe, because we've been there. You know, we were there 10 years ago. We understand that a lot of property management teams threw money at the offshore thing because institutions were begging them to, with very, very mixed results. I think the offshore REITs that we have at the moment, the good ones are very good, and they've clearly proven this, and they are rock solid, and no one denies this. But as for local funds, they can't just wake up and change and become offshore. So they've got to find stuff locally. And the Western Cape is clearly the pick of the litter right now. If you look at a company like Spear REIT, which is really the Western Cape focused REIT, they're up over 20% in 2024. I think it's nearly 22%. And that's already off a pretty strong valuation base. So it shows you that the province is doing well. And there are huge question marks around governance in Gauteng in particular. Serena, I'm actually not sure where you are in South Africa, but my feed is just full of people complaining about the water in Joburg and everything else. Whereas in Cape Town, it's just a far better governed place. I'm one of those semigrators. I've been here for about 10 years now. And despite all the stuff you'll see online, a lot of which is politically motivated to try and discredit it, et cetera, the reality is that it is just a well-governed place. That those are the facts. So this means that people want to invest here. They feel good about buying property down here. They certainly feel better about it than they did up in Gauteng, for example, or maybe in KZN. And when you see a group like Growthpoint trying to redirect so much of its exposure towards the Western Cape, it sends a big message. And I've got to tell you, it makes me wonder if Spear is a takeout target for one of these big funds, because in one deal, you get in your hands on a very big Western Cape portfolio, one shot, which is something to think about going into next year.
Well, it's interesting what you say there, because Spear bought a small portfolio from Emira, and they are doing very well, but you also have a high props acquisition of Table Bay Mall. So expansion from that perspective in terms of the offshore exposure. I wonder if Monet is considering moving his head office to the Western Cape, considering they own the super regional in Canal Walk there. You know, there are a lot of problems in Gauteng. I'm based in Gauteng. MoneyWeb's head office is here. Thankfully, I'm not as exposed to the water issues. And I think a lot of people who are not necessarily the complainers, but there's no question there's water issues in Gauteng. So I'm not the guest on the podcast, so I'm going to stop it right there. But you talked about not necessarily seeing the kind of performance in 2025 as 2024 has been so strong from particular SA REIT perspective. So has the SA REIT re-rating already happened in 2024? I had a thing here about crystal ball gazing, but clearly you have some thoughts around what could actually happen in 2025. Has it, the run happened? Or could we see a little bit of a further recovery on the back of lower interest rates and that whole GNU situation you talked about? retail funds benefiting from it. You know, those are longer term benefits, which I've asked the retail funds and they haven't been as vocal about. But considering how well they did during COVID lockdown with TERS, the two-pot retirement system clearly is going to benefit some of the retail-focused funds.
Yeah, so look, I think the situation coming into 2024 was a little more obvious. It was a bit easier to call in terms of interest rates. It was really just interest rates. That was it for me. And it felt to me like the election stuff was probably going to be more of the same or maybe slightly better. I'm definitely not going to say that I foresaw the GNU. I absolutely didn't. I can't believe many people did. But, you know, investing is about understanding what the different catalysts are. And it felt to me the political climate of South Africa had gotten to a point where people were tired. It was likely that there was going to be some positive change. So that's, you know, more likely to be a pro than a con. And then the interest rates, which had to start dropping at some point. So that was kind of coming into 2024, why I felt that the property sector was going to potentially be quite strong. I'm not sure that I expected it to be this strong, and I'm happy that I did what I did in terms of positioning my own money around it. Going into 2025, though, what can we expect? Well, the offshore-focused funds on the JSE are very Euro-centric. The biggest economies in Europe are in a pretty rough place right now. I literally could not be more bearish about the automotive sector in Germany, something I've also done some Supernatural Stocks content on. So I would be very selective, very, very selective about exposure there. Obviously, a lot of the funds are not exposed directly to that. They are in other places in Europe, but you know, just be careful there. We know that Trump has made a lot of noise around inflationary policies already. So I think we could well be disappointed by interest rate decreases. And the Saab has also shown us that they are not keen to cut unless the US is cutting, you know, out of fear for the Rand and everything else. Even though every single time economists beg and plead for a cut on this side, regardless of what's happening in the US, I don't know how much of that we'll really see. So the macro drivers are looking a little bit dicier going into 2025. It's not as obvious as it was coming into 2024. So what would be the catalyst for another good year in the property sector? As you say, I think it would be the GNU. It would be that, yes, the two-pot system filtering through into retail. I think that's part of it. Retail-focused REITs are definitely my favorite. You know, for me, it just makes the most sense. I think the office REITs are still in a difficult space. I think that the industrial REITs are fully valued. You know, there isn't really much room for big upside there. Whereas in the retail REITs, they have the turnover-linked clauses. You know, they've got the ability to keep adding on, etc. And yes, I think we've seen some big trends towards online shopping, etc. But there are still reasons to believe that especially convenience retail, etc. can do quite well. And then retail malls that are focused on lower income groups. That's a massive demographic in South Africa coming through from informal into formal retail. It's probably the most exciting retail segment in the country. And some of that is available on the local market.
Well, you're seeing some of that chatted to Vukile because their results were recently, and they talk about exposure offshore, but investments in the likes of Ntata Mall and various other rural retail options. Just to conclude, Finance Ghost, what are your stock picks or stocks to watch in the SA REIT space for 2025? Are you giving us some? I know you have to take it with a pinch of caution, as any investment will go. But what are the stocks to watch then?
I knew you would ask me for stock picks. It just wouldn't be an end of year / start of year show if there weren't stock picks, right? So look, I've alluded to a couple of them already. I do like that story of low income focused retail. So Tupula Income Fund is a pretty good example there. That was up 35%, by the way, in 2024, another strong performer. Fairvest has been increasing its stake in Tupula. So keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on both of them. Fairvest is really interesting. There are two classes of shares there. So you've got the A shares. Those are the inflation protectors, basically, where your distribution per share increases by, I think it's the lesser of 5% or the most recent CPI number. So that's kind of the very steady, I'm just looking for inflation protection, off it goes. It's like an inflation-linked bond almost. And then you've got the Fairvest Bs, which are the ones that carry all the variability in profits. So in a great year, they do very well. And in a poor year, they will do very poorly. They returned 42% in 2024. So that's an example of how well those shares can do in a strong year. I don't think we'll see percentages like that again in 2025. But, you know, I would have that on my list of one to keep an eye on would be the Fairvest Bs, maybe Tupula if you're looking for that low income retail trend. I said earlier that Spear REIT could well be a takeout target. And if I read some of the commentary around funds like Growthpoint looking at the Western Cape, I have to believe that, you know, the huge funds are looking at this and saying, okay, how do we get our hands on more of the Western Cape? Now, this is obviously purely speculation. It's just, again, it's that former investment banker in me. It's just logical, right? If you're sitting there and you've got a huge balance sheet to run and you're looking for an easy way to get a, you know, multi-billion rand portfolio in the key province, there's only one way to do it right now in the local market, and that is Spear. It's on a trailing dividend yield of 8%. It's purely focused on the Western Cape. And, you know, if it, there is no deal out there and if no one is looking at this for some reason or if nothing ever happens, you get paid a nice dividend and you should get the capital uptick from the Western Cape. So it's one of those classic examples of a good business that sort of pays you to wait with a potential catalyst for a really big return if an offer does come through. Who knows? You know, and that's the kind of thing I like to look for, is like, what are businesses that will pay me even if things go okay and could pay me a lot more if something really special happens? And then I think the last point I just want to make is that ETF exposure in a tax-free savings account in this sector is really, really strong. I can assure you that in March, when I top up my tax-free savings account, property will almost certainly still be on my list, because you can get tax-free distributions from these REITs. You're basically turning yourself into a little pension fund and saying, thank you very much. The REIT collects its rent, pays it out. The REIT doesn't pay any tax. I don't pay any tax in my tax-free savings account. It's this very pure, you know, it's like buy to let done right. That's basically how my buy to let part of my portfolio is in my tax-free savings account into these property ETFs. You get the capital gain tax-free as well. So it's very powerful. And I think in that case, I will focus on the Satrix ETF purely because I don't want the overweight exposure to NEPI and to Growthpoint. The bigger funds just can't give you those kind of returns. You know, I'm still very, very young in terms of an investment journey. I'm nowhere near retirement. So I'm happy to take on the risk. And yeah, so in summary, sort of broad exposure is always worth thinking about in a tax-free savings account. And some interesting stocks to watch. Spear is one of them. I think Dipula Fairvest could be two others. But there's still a lot of good companies on the market. And I do think that property can have another decent year. I'm just not sure it's going to have a blowout year like we saw in 2024.
Thank you so much, Finance Ghost. I really appreciate it. It's longer than I anticipated, but that last bit I actually wanted to end, but maybe it's best to end with you. I was going to talk about the fact that that was one of the top three podcasts, tax-free savings account. So thank you for that. I think we're all learning, and some podcasts surprised me. So my top podcast was actually on Stay in City, talk about semigration within Gauteng. So that was the top podcast for Property Pod last year or this year. But yeah, thank you so much for your time, and thanks for all your great work as usual.
Thanks, Siren. Thanks. It's been great to have a podcast on MoneyWeb this year, and hopefully we'll still do this for a long time. So thank you very much for the opportunities.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Property Pod with Suren Naidu. To listen to more episodes, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates. Follow Suren on Twitter at Suren Naidu for more of his property industry content and other business stories. The Property Pod.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.